All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, December 5th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis. I like how you sound a little bit surprised about which podcast we're going to do each time, like whether it's the NFL or the NBA. We're doing the NFL podcast.
I do have to do a quick mental rewind to make sure I know, and I never look at the date ahead of time, so I start talking a little slower so that I can just click.
So you can look at the side of your screen, yeah,
exactly,
sure,
and just check what date it is. Anyway, from if this is an inspiring conference to you, then nothing else will. DFSR.com/NFL will get you started with a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for NFL, FanDuel, DraftKings, NBA for those two sites as well. Base projections for NHL. It's all covered under one package show when you sign up. So free for 3 days, $34.95 a month. After that, and you're all good to go. DFSR.com/NFL. And I was also told that I speak too fast on the podcast, so I'm working on slowing it down, baby. So
really? I feel like I talk way faster than you, but I guess no one talks to me about it, so whatever.
Yeah, someone tweeted me about it, so I don't know. All it takes is one person to point it out to you, and then I think that everyone thinks it. So here we go. All right, NFL Week 13 is in the books. Pretty interesting week. A lot of things I think we can kind of break down, especially stuff that we discussed going into the week as sort of wondering about industry consensus about a couple different players and then whether or not you could get away from. I'm just going to start off with the elephant in the room here. Well, I don't know if it's an elephant, but the Alvin Kamara. So Alvin Kamara last week took him 9 or 10 touches to get the 2 touchdowns. This week, running bad, only takes him 14 touches to get the 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. We kind of bet where he would be, not bet, but we kind of speculated on where he would be owned in cash games, at least on FanDuel. And I had set the line at something like 20-something%. You took the under, which I think it was, right? Like, what was his ownership in FanDuel?
7%.
Okay, right. So 7%. So that at least is comforting to me in the sense that
there's still 7% of the player pool that has no clue what it's doing.
Though that's fine. I thought it'd be a lot higher, to be honest with you. I mean, but I think there are just enough reasons, no matter what people want to say about him in terms of talent, and he's awesome, so don't get me wrong, but and watching him play, it is one of those things, like if you see that swing pass going and you don't have him in any of your lineups, your heart does kind of skip a beat because it does not look like he can be tackled really at all in the open field.
He's a mix between Bo Jackson and LaDainian Tomlinson, as far as I'm concerned, and I suspect that he'll keep up 7-8 yards a carry for the rest of his career.
But here's the thing, though. So we're getting to a point now where, I mean, his per season stats, like even if you're trying to model, even with regress numbers, like if you want to regress it, it's hard to find out what his regressed mean is, though, because he's a rookie and he's been so great. So you're kind of either A, just kind of stuck finding player comps, or sort of making it up, because if you use
so what you do is you just make it up, because you can't, it's pointless to average such outlier performance like this, or even to regress it a little bit. So what you do is you just look at running backs in the NFL and you say, he is really good. He's one of the top 5 running backs, let's say, in all of the NFL. So you just layer on top of him, I don't know, Todd Gurley's projection or something like that, if you really think he's even close to as good as he has been. Because if you do any sort of averaging or any sort of even regression, you're going to paint him out to be the best NFL running back ever. So I think that would be a bold claim to make. So maybe if you really do think he's one of the best running backs in the NFL, you just give him Todd Gurley's projection and shrug your shoulders and call it a day. But I wouldn't go any further than that.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens this week because, well, one, we're not going to be stuck having to think about him on the main slate because New Orleans plays Atlanta on the Thursday game.
Yeah, that's too bad.
What's interesting, though, because we've always seen outsized ownership on that Thursday game, and he's like just the kind of guy that the person that wants to just play all the guys on Thursdays just because they want to get like the Thursday night sweat in. And that person, by the way, does still exist, very, very much still exists. And so I'm wondering now what his ownership will be, where he's the main attraction on a Thursday night game that's going to be pretty high paced. Over-under came in at 53 with New Orleans only at -1. So you figure there's going to be a lot of possessions in this game. He's clearly the most high-profile player. I think it's going to be funny to see what ownership on, say, like him and Julio Jones is in this one. Two very publicly high upside fantasy guys that people just want to that kind of want to take, and sometimes even match up independent. So anyway, we're not gonna have to worry about it for the main slate. But Kamara, 14 touches, 2 more touchdowns, looks awesome. I get a text every single time he does something for my brother-in-law, because every week I tell my brother-in-law this is not the week to play him, and every week I've been proven wrong about that. Anything else that you wanted to say about Kamara here? Do you think we covered it? I just feel like that's the thing that people kind of most talk about, because just the season he's having is kind of just unbelievable.
Yeah, I won't play him in any format for any games for the rest of the season, I would suspect. So that's my general take. I just think it's totally whenever something looks too good to be true, it usually is. And I think that really holds true in DFS and basically everything. And you're wrong sometimes when you make claims like that, right? Like sometimes the guy does turn out to be the best running back in history or the best quarterback in history or whatever. I probably would have said the same thing about Tom Brady after his rookie season, you know? So you're going to be wrong and kind of famously wrong when you get this wrong, but almost always you're right. So yeah, I'm not going to play Kamara at all this season.
Oh yeah, and just the final point here, and just for those who haven't listened to the podcast, this is not a talent evaluation thing. This is just simply the Saints. It's actually more of a Saints problem that they just don't give them the ball enough, right? Like, so it's not that if all of a sudden like Mark Ingram went down and Kamara was the only guy left and he was the most expensive, he would be the easiest play ever, right? Like he would be
chalk. But I still don't think, like, if you gave him 17 carries a game and whatever, five receptions, I'm just not sure he's a $9,400 running back or whatever. Like, I just don't, there just aren't that many of those, right? Like, would you say if he just switched teams and was on the Steelers, would you just pencil him in for more production than Le'Veon Bell around the same? Like, what would your guess be there?
It's so hard for me because I'm not really good at evaluating talent. I'm not a good, like, X's and O's talent evaluation like that. I mean, when I watch him play, he looks awesome. He looks better than Bell. But again,
he's always running around not getting tackled by people. And that sometimes that just happens. Sometimes it breaks that way. Yeah, I don't know. If given the same price point, him versus Le'Veon Bell, I would be really hard pressed to pick him over Le'Veon Bell. And that's even with Ingram being out of the picture. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, but that's my curmudgeonly opinion.
Some other performances that I found interesting this week. After basically a three or four year absence from football, Josh Gordon does come back from his suspension. Yeah, he played his last game somewhere on the first or second week of 2014. So 3 years later, he comes back from going into this year, for some reason, I thought he had been banned from the league permanently, but I guess not. He comes back this week. Starts, sees 11 targets, was kind of good, four for 85, still has DeShone Kizer. He was a guy that we kind of wrote off, or at least we're saying taking a wait and see approach on a guy like Gordon. But all of a sudden, I mean, he's in the mix. He was really highly targeted. He was sort of productive. I mean, average 21 yards a catch here. What do we do with a guy like Josh Gordon going for here?
Yeah, I'm not sure what to do with him, because on one hand, it's encouraging that he saw so many targets. It's always hard to evaluate a lot of targets from a bad quarterback. He did well on a yards per catch basis, but didn't do well converting targets into receptions. And now he's not that cheap. He's like in the $6,700 range, which is kind of what we're used to paying for guys like Davante Adams or Jarvis Landry, or in my mind, at least, or Cooper Kupp, you know, more proven commodities that I think are just safer overall. I don't tend to make my big gambles on $6,700 receivers for whatever reason this season. So I think he'll still be disproportionately high owned for things like big tournaments. So I don't know that you necessarily get a ton of separation. I don't know. With Gordon, I'm intrigued. Obviously, he's just a huge, huge talent and could put up huge numbers if everything breaks correct. But it still seems like a lot has to go right for it to really break right for him. Again, as evidenced by Cleveland's overall offensive performance, which was just terrible.
Back in 2013, when he really only had one great season back in 2013, but it was an unbelievable season that year, over 1600 yards receiving, had like 185 targets or something. He was awesome. You want to take 10 seconds and try to guess who the top 10 running backs were that season? You'll see if you can name any.
The top 10 running backs in 2013. Good God. Yep. Keeping in mind that this is right before we launched the business and I had just fallen completely off a cliff in terms of following football, but let's see how I do. Top 10 running backs in 2013. Was Edgerrin James still in the league in 2013?
I'm just going to read
him. No. I'm going to get some. Adrian Peterson.
He was number five.
How about Jamal Charles? Edgerrin James was a joke, by the way. How about Jamal Charles?
Number three.
Who else was good back then?
Go, give one more, and then I'm going to read him.
Marshawn Lynch.
He was number six. Nice job. LeSean McCoy, Matt Forte, Jamal Charles, Alfred Morris, Adrian Peterson, Marshawn Lynch, Ryan Matthews from the Chargers.
Wow.
Eddie Lacy, Frank Gore, DeMarco Murray. So almost all the guys still in the league.
Made life. I did pretty well. I'm proud of myself.
Yeah, no, you did pretty well. Life comes at you pretty fast in the NFL. I'm actually surprised all those guys are actually still, I think most of them are still trucking along in the league. And the receivers were pretty much the same names that we're still kind of talking about, or a lot of the same names we're still talking about today. Antonio Brown was number two. Calvin Johnson obviously retired. Demaryius Thomas, AJ Green, Alshon Jeffrey, Andre Johnson retired. Garcon, Hurt, Jackson, and Nelson. So I thought the NFL turnover would be a little higher 4 years later than it looked like for, than for when Gordon was still around. So, because I was kind of thinking, I was like, oh, he's getting old. Like, this is, he's going to be just kind of completely useless. Not, but in NFL, is like dog, the opposite of dog years, I guess.
Well, also, you usually age based on just getting your body pounded, right? And given that he hasn't been playing very much, assuming that he stayed in shape, he could just be fine.
And he's clearly still in shape. If he just, if he was able to run around, if he was able to just kind of up this kind of production after not having seen the NFL field in that long. We can get into some of the performances, just other news and notes. Tyrod Taylor went down with an injury this week, so it's unclear if he's going to be coming back in. Not like it kind of really matters for the Bills, but he went down and I believe he was carted off. It looks like Gronk is going to be suspended for a game after a cheap shot that he took on the sidelines to the Bills defender this week. What do you think we do? What do you, with no Gronk this week, what do you, and I don't think, well, he's going to appeal the suspension. So it's all, although this sometimes moves a little bit faster than it does, like in say in baseball, but what would we do? What would we think we would want to do with the Patriots if they were without their big tight end?
Sure. I think Tom Brady gets a downgrade there for obvious reasons. As far as like distributing the targets, Gronk has been really highly targeted the last 2 weeks, but you can go back to the Oakland game and he only had 3 targets. So I think, you know, a reasonable thing to do would just be to go back to the Oakland game, figure out how the targets were apportioned in that game and kind of just apply them, right? I mean, 3 targets isn't very much. Things do change very well in the NFL in terms of who the top priorities are in given teams. But I think with the Patriots, that would be a reasonable place to start.
A couple other news and notes here. So I'm wondering your thoughts on, we can probably break it down a little bit more when we get into our cash game plays and game by game breakdown later in the week. But up until this point of this year, we've been targeting a lot of guys against San Francisco because their pace of play was so high because they stunk, right? Like their quarterback play was really bad. They were getting a lot of 3 and outs. They'd fall behind a lot and then there'd be a lot of incomplete passes. So the clock would stop. There's a lot of things that can, there are a lot of things that can kind of factor in to your pace of play stats. And it usually revolves around whether or not if you have a high power passing attack because you just score very quickly and then give the ball to the other team, or you're very bad and pass a lot and then the clock stops, yada, yada, yada. Now, San Francisco had been one of the worst in the league coming into last week at this because of just sort of like what they were getting from the quarterback and the rest of their team. But now Jimmy Garoppolo comes in and they completely dominated the average time of possession in this game against the Bears. Is this something you think we would want to? It's a clear, huge move in terms of upgrading their quarterback play, moving from I can't even remember who they had there before. CJ Pattard now into Garoppolo. Is this something that we would want to maybe take a look at more? Because we've been trying to target people against San Francisco for this reason all season long, and now all of a sudden they seem like they've cured at least a big part of why that might have been a problem for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely looks as though Garoppolo is going to be better. I would always caution people again to, you know, get too overexcited about one performance. But given that it was so much different than all of the other performances they've had at QB this season, I think it's probably worth taking into consideration. For me, it ups the stock of guys like Carlos Hyde, who is already kind of lurking on my radar as an interesting big tournament play just based on the target share. Like, we haven't looked too closely at Hyde for cash game purposes for obvious reasons, just because San Francisco has been so bad. But you look at the targets in the last 6 weeks, 5, not great, but then 13, 3, 11, 9, 8. Poor man's Alvin Kamara, dare I say. So I think Hyde could be an interesting play this week against Houston for that reason.
Yeah, and I think like when a team makes just a huge marked shift in what they do, and again, Garoppolo is not, I know you're saying caution, and I'm not saying we play Garoppolo here, but like San Francisco gave up a lot to get him, and
sure,
he was a guy
got some track record.
And the Patriots did not really want to give him up at all, and I'm just kind of forced to near the end because they just weren't going to be able to re-sign him and had to get something for him. And like I said, industry consensus seems to think that he is very good. So I think it does paint a new picture of just how we target the Rams, because like again, we played Jordan Howard, and the reason I really noticed it this week is because we started Jordan Howard in some cash games with this matchup, and he was completely buzzed off because the Bears just never had the ball. Like I think the first drive for the 49ers in the third quarter took like almost the entire third quarter. So the Bears
complete passes that really makes the clock go faster. That's for sure.
Right. So, and I just was watching that game just tick by and tick by. I was like, are the Bears ever going to touch the ball again? Right. So anyway, Marquise Goodwin probably gets, he went to 8 targets, converted all 8 of them for 8 for 99, no touchdowns. Lewis Murphy got 6 targets, but really couldn't convert them. Trent Taylor, all these guys just saw the upticks in just how often, or yeah, their conversion percentages. We probably all need to reconfigure some of those because they're just, it seems like they're going to get a better quality of pass. Those are most of the news and notes I had. There's some outside of just like general performances that we can go through. You want to start there? What are some of the performances that stood out to you this week?
Yeah, the big one for me actually was Kenyon Drake. Some people actually did take a stab on him in various formats, and he goes out there and just has one of the best running back performances of the week. 23 for 120 and a touch, three receptions on 5 targets for 21 yards, 20 fantasy points overall. It's really, really encouraging because Miami has spread the ball around a ton this season in terms of all the running back opportunity. Things have consolidated it there a bit around Drake. Unfortunately, this is the Monday night game this week. Maybe fortunately, it would still be tough to play a running back against New England here, given how poor they were at running the ball the last time they played on the 26th. But definitely got to keep on your radar going forward. The next time Miami's in a closer game, I think this is the real deal from Drake. I think he is a lot more talented than the other guys they've been running out there. And I think you can probably look to play him at these super cheap prices. So, I mean, $6,200 is way too cheap for his level of opportunity right now. So he's definitely a guy I'm looking at going forward.
And it's hard to imagine his price increases too much, like you said, after this week's matchup.
Yeah, exactly. I suspect he'll not be that great this week.
Miami with one of the greatest troll moves of all time. It's more like a dick move more than anything. They go up 35. I think it was when they went up 35-9, or it was either that or they were up 31 or 32-9 in the fourth quarter with like 6 minutes left, and they onside kicked it. I don't know, like that's the kind of thing that like that has the coach just run across and just fight the other coach like at the end of the game, because it's like what's the point? You're just up 3 scores against Trevor Siemian, who's just never going to bring you back. He was not at that point. He was 19 for 41. Like he was not going to be mounting a 3-score comeback against the thing. So yeah, up 3 scores, just onside kick it, just to have fun.
I love it. That's a man's move right there. It's in our instinct, Doug. But like, it's like when two kids play video games. I've seen this, and it's all over, and then they just sit there and just kill the other guy repeatedly instead of just ending the game. That's the grown up version of that. So I'm in.
Well, the grown up version of that says, well, if I do this, I'm just going to need to be prepared to fight someone like in the runway.
Yeah, whatever. Well, that's where you just don't care. You're just like so unscared of how like just weak and cucked, dare I say, the other team has been.
Oh God,
I'm going there.
We're gonna get like an iTunes ban here. other performances that stood out to you this week?
So the other one was Jamal Williams. He's a guy we had a lot of discussion about going into the week because we were concerned about the return of Aaron Jones. We got the news going right before lock that Jamal Williams was still going to be the lead back. We weren't totally sure what to make of that, you know, and we typically tend to go with what a team has actually done in the past rather than what a team says they're going to do, just because that tends to be a better indicator of what they're actually going to do. In this case, it turned out that they were accurate. Jones just had the one carry. He did get a touchdown off it. So just to infuriate those Jamal Williams owners who made the correct move and then just got totally ripped off by that. I got a kick out of that, mostly because we didn't make the correct move and play Jamal Williams, but it looks for all the world like he's going to continue to be the lead guy there going forward. He's more expensive now, $6,600. But going up against Cleveland, as we've talked about, who we believe is an overrated run defense, I think he makes an interesting play next week for sure.
It does sure seem like they're fully committed to having him just be the guy, right? So like I'm not...
Oh yeah, at this point, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, and by the way, Cleveland, Melvin Gordon averaged more than 4 yards a carry last week, and Austin Eckler averaged close to 5 yards a carry on 23 total carries. So when they're starting to face running backs that actually can do stuff and on offenses that I actually do think. Now, I'm not sure Green Bay completely qualifies there, but some of the numbers that we've seen, like we've said, from Cleveland's run defense, we've thought they've been overrated all season. And I think that the more they see actual talent and actual teams that have a plan with the ground game, you're going to see those numbers tend.
Well, as they become more and more demoralized too, right? They just lose every single week. How hard can you keep crashing with the front seven when you're 0-13? I'm just not sure.
Any other running backs? We can go talk about some of these wide receiver games, but any other running backs stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, running back continues to be kind of an enigma. I don't know if we ever reflected on the Alfred Morris game, but 27 carries for 127 yards and a touch. He looks legit going forward. The Sites did have time to catch that and price correct since that was the Thursday game. Le'Veon Bell still amazing. Rex Burkhead, you know, we talked about trying to figure out who the upside running back was on the Patriots. We guessed correct. He punches in 2 touchdowns. Looks like he'll continue to get the goal line work if that's the type of thing you're interested in. Perhaps with Gronk being out, there's more opportunity to go around. Not really a cash game play, but definitely a guy worth thinking about. And then the last guy for me was Marshawn Lynch. I mean, Lynch goes out there, another guy we were looking at very heavily coming into this week. 17 carries for 101 yards and a touchdown. I think Lynch is a sneaky, really, really good opportunity guy going forward. In the right game scripts, I think he is the clear running back number one in a really decimated Oakland offense. So just $6,400, a $200 price increase. Just getting a ton of opportunity there.
The Raiders will get at least Crabtree back this game, and they may get Cooper back as well. We had kind of taken a shot on some of the Oakland wide receivers. We looked at Roberts and Cordarrelle Patterson, and then Johnny Holton was the guy who caught the touchdown. Although Patterson, Roberts did see,
they were fine.
Yeah, they saw targets in the pass game and just couldn't really get there on touchdowns. Speaking of touchdowns, we thought our week was off to like toward GPP heaven.
At the beginning
with Travis Kelce just comes out and just catches two touchdowns in like the first like 6 minutes of not like I don't even mean 6 minutes of the game. I mean like this first like six real minutes of football once it started, and then was basically just disappeared after that. We thought, you know, Casey going into the week, Casey had turned over their offensive play calling duties away from Andy Reid to the offensive coordinator whose name it just escapes me right now, but and we didn't really know what to make of it. But the only, and someone in the chat room had asked, you know, what do we do with that? And I said I don't trust anybody, but I do still trust Kelce because it's hard to imagine the way of all the guys, it was hard to imagine his role diminishing as much as, like, say, Kareem Hunt or like whatever they were going to plan on doing with Alex Smith. Now they barely ran Hunt. Smith was probably in the GPP winning lineups. So what do we do with a guy like him going forward? Do we think that just their plan is just to pass more? He passed only 33 times. He still wasn't that good. He had a couple of those huge touchdowns to Kelce. All the touchdowns were basically just long downfield shots. Do we want to look at Smith any differently this now, or is he still just kind of the same guy?
No, he had a 70-yard run in this game. Like, I don't know. Smith is the same guy to me. Nothing has really changed fundamentally whatsoever. We've seen what he can typically do with that number of pass attempts, and it normally looks like between 200 and 300 yards, usually in the middle there somewhere. You can't necessarily count on the passing touchdowns. I'm not interested in Smith going forward at an $8,200 price tag, unless it's just the perfect matchup, but I don't really see the KC matchup that way.
Yeah, it could be the perfect matchup. Right now, when we run lineups, he is coming in as the top quarterback. He's placing Oakland. They have the highest overall total on the Sunday main slate. Because we are getting, again, like we're going to be missing the Saints, the Falcons, and Brady with the Patriots all are gone off the main slate. So I really think we might be in a case where we are looking pretty closely maybe at Alex Smith. I'm not going to feel great about it. Kareem Hunt, we have been completely killed. So he's the...
Thank God.
Kareem Hunt,
well, by the way, my wires crossed there. I said in the KC matchup, Alex Smith notoriously on KC. My brain got fried. I didn't mean that. I meant that he was playing KC. And that would have not been a good matchup, but Oakland is a great matchup. So for that reason, I now like Alex Smith, realizing that he's not playing against his own defense.
What other performances stand out to you? We talked about some quarterbacks.
Running back, I think, looks good. I was going to slide over to wide receivers. If you know you have any of those, I can certainly.
I mean, the guys that stand out, like obviously we talked about Tyreek Hill, we talked about KC and the Tyreek Hill. He converts 185 yards and two touchdowns and only nine targets. He's just that downfield guy that it's like the kind of the T.Y. Hilton types where there's going to be weeks where you're going to catch lightning in a bottle on him just getting separation over the top from the secondary. And then there's going to be weeks where he just completely and totally disappears. And it just, if you're willing to take on that kind of variance with that kind of play, then he'll get you there, you know, twice a year or something like that. And then you're going to have, you know, 8 weeks or something like that, where you're just going to get absolutely nothing out of him. I mean, do you kind of view Tyreek Hill the same way? It's hard to trust. He's always just a little too expensive for how little he touches the ball for me.
Yep, that's it for me. It's the expense relative to touches. It's kind of how I thought about Brandon Cooks going in the last week, and I know he wound up getting there for us, but these guys that don't get the, you know, you can't reliably count on double-digit-ish targets, really everything needs to go right, and that usually looks like a downfield touchdown. Tyreek gets the 79-yarder, and so that was awesome, but you just can't rely on that going forward. Give me a guy like Keenan Allen any day. Continue to love this guy. 14 targets, 10 catches, 105 and a touch. I think he's still just one of the best receivers for fantasy purposes in football, and just pat ourselves on the back for that call. Another guy I was curious to know your thoughts on is Larry Fitzgerald. Just keeps doing it. 10 targets, just 10 receptions, 10 for 10, 100 yards and a touch, and one of the cleanest mathematical lines of the season. Is Larry Fitzgerald just kind of still this sneaky, you know, big upside high floor play? I mean, even at 7,600 right now with all sorts of craziness at QB.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take down his targets because most and then kind of just gave him a slightly less quality target that he was getting from Palmer, which, by the way, weren't like great targets or wasn't great quality to begin with because Palmer's not exactly.
Well, we realize that now for sure. Yeah.
Mr. Accuracy. But the fact that when you can put this game kind of game together, I'm just fine taking sort of like what you've done for the season and having it be the case. I think 10 is probably the high mark just because their offense is just not all that good. And they have, you know, at times struggled to stay on the field. Although Kerwin Williams filled in pretty admirably for Adrian Peterson this week. So, yeah, I mean, Fitzgerald is, he's not a value. When we were grabbing him earlier in the season, I felt like we were kind of taking him somewhere in like that, the low 6,000s kind of range. He's just up to 7,600 on FanDuel right now. I just he's fine. That's just much too expensive, I think, to pay for him. I think you're going to get fine other, like so for instance, this week, I guess it's not in the main thing. I was going to say, like, Michael, would you rather have Michael Thomas or Larry Fitzgerald for the same price?
Ooh, that's a close one. Maybe, I think Larry Fitzgerald.
Interesting. That one is close. We have Thomas. Thomas finally did catch a touchdown last week because that's where he had been kind of, we thought, running a little bit bad in terms of the offense. But no, I'm fine with Fitzgerald overall. I think he's just kind of a little too expensive for me. What about DeAndre Hopkins? Though? Another 14 targets, only sees so 8 for 80. Do we do anything with him? I mean, people were talking about him being a very popular play going into the week. He was kind of popular. He was like 40% on FanDuel, and I can't remember the DraftKings. He and Mike Evans ended up on FanDuel, at least to be very chalky. We were surprised. We were completely off the chalk with it when it came to those two guys. And in the end, at least with Evans, it was definitely correct. And, you know, Hopkins was kind of fair without being spectacular. What do we do with a guy like Hopkins going forward? The targets are still there. They just can't seem to get him the ball.
Yeah, he's a better play on DraftKings where the receptions matter more. He's not turning the receptions into a whole lot either. No fault of his own. It's just bad quarterback play. I think he's interesting. I think the floor is pretty high. There's probably potential upside. You're probably paying something of a premium for it, especially at 8,600 against San Francisco. Like, I'd be pretty shocked if he wound up in our optimal lineups, but it's tough to go too wrong with him.
One other news and note that I had forgotten from before was Eli, the Geno Smith era is over in New York Giants land. After 1 week, failed. Who would have seen this coming? That experiment failed. And with it was the end of the coaching career, at least the head coaching career for right now, Ben McAdoo and the general manager, Jerry Reese. So everyone's fired and they bring back Eli Manning. But they did it just in time to ruin his consecutive game streak that he had going. He had started like every game for the Giants for like the last 5 or 6 years or something like that. Some insane number. Maybe it might have been longer than that. What do we want to do with the Giants here? Sterling Shepard is back healthy. Looked okay last week. Evan Ingram looked actually pretty good, even with Geno Smith under center. Do we want to go back to maybe possibly targeting some of these guys, knowing that Manning is going to be the thrower?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think Shepard is very affordably priced. I think Ingram is affordably priced for what he was doing with Eli. I think they're all in play.
Yeah, Shepard, I think Shepard's coming in like the low 6,000s on FanDuel. He's very cheap as well on DraftKings, where he's only 5,300. So we'll get more into that. We'll get more into that as we go talk about some of our cash game plays and the game-by-game breakdown. Anything else stand out to you this week?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of little odds and ends on the wide receiver notes. Guys to maybe look at for big tournaments this week. I'll just give my brief opinion on them. Jermaine Kearse and Robbie Anderson both combined for 264 yards. I would wait and see on those guys. I don't know that. I mean, Kearse has actually been probably the more targeted. Anderson with more of the touchdowns. I wouldn't count on either of those performances going forward at their current price points. We saw a nice resurgence target game for Golden Tate, perhaps still a little bit too expensive. And then Nelson Aguilar winds up going off completely for 141 and a touch, doubles his targets. I don't know that you can continue to trust that. That looked to be more of a matchup thing to me than anything else. So keep an eye on. But yeah, actually a lot of really interesting cheap wide receivers. Really looking forward to the game by game podcast this week to dive into it more. But until then, those are the big notes for me this week.
I did forget my second favorite thing after the onside kick for Miami. My second favorite thing from this week in the NFL was the in the KC Jets game. Marcus Peters near the end of the game gets a pass interference call. The Jets had one of like the all time, you would think you were on like some kind of candid camera thing going, because they had first and goal from the one and they had to run like 9 plays to get into the end zone. And it was like, they just kept getting first downs because of penalties and all this stuff. Like, but it legit took them 9 tries to get into the end zone, except on one play, Marcus Peters gets called for a pass interference and is so upset that he takes the flag and throws it into the stands. But the guy, so that in itself was not great, but the guy who caught the flag in the stands looked like, he looked like a bachelorette at a wedding that catches the bouquet and is just completely losing their mind. Like, he's just holding up in front of them, just shaking it around, just high-fiving all his friends. It really looked like it was maybe the most exciting moment of his life was to catch this flag that Marcus Peters had thrown into the stand. So that was my second favorite thing from this week. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NFL. / NBA. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. We'll be back again on Thursday talking cash game plays, Friday with our game by game breakdown. Buddy, I'll talk to you then, I guess.
Later, buddy.